Hello, and welcome to episode 37 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I'm a little bit hungover, and my voice is a lot bit hoarse after screaming my face off at last night's incredible Game 7 of the NBA Finals, but it doesn't matter. The Cavs are NBA champions, and on today's show, we're going to dive deep into last night's historic game to try to figure out just how LeBron and company pulled this one off. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan living in San Francisco. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT, a prodigy with NBA statistics, and perhaps the world's biggest LeBron James fan. How's it going, Arnav?
I am extremely sleepy, but it was totally worth it. I did not sleep till 7 a.m.
Wow.
But I had a lot of fun just staying up and, you know, watching old clips,
consuming as much as you could.
Recaps.
I mean, just it's such an amazing thing. I mean, I don't even know like where to start here. I guess with
we can start with the Finals MVP, Anderson Varejao.
Right. Yeah. He finally came back to earth last night after
actually
almost leading the Warriors
to
victory. He did. Yeah.
Can you guess his net rating in Game 7?
He was -9 last night.
But that was only in 8 minutes of play.
That's brutal.
And that ended up being a -50 per 100 possessions when he was on the floor.
I am pleased with that.
The Cavs had an offensive rating of 137.5 when he was on the floor. They just attacked him every single time.
They did.
He had no clue what he was doing defensively. He couldn't rebound for shit.
Yeah, he looked like with us this year, finally.
Yep.
After... he had a positive net rating coming into this game, I think.
No, he did. And it was extremely positive, too. I think it was like in a +10 kind of range, actually.
Yeah.
And this goes to tell you that you shouldn't exactly trust small sample sizes, especially in the playoffs or especially in the finals, because those are, you know, like, what, 50-minute sample sizes as opposed to something that happened all the time in the regular season when he was terrible.
Yeah, it's really tempting to look at small slices and make judgments. I mean, I think the biggest one is Kevin Love last night was +19. He led the Cavs with a +19.
And that was a +19 when the Cavs won by +4. So, like, it's always good to get some perspective on these plus-minus numbers.
Right.
He was a negative before this game. So whenever he was on the floor, Cavs were actually getting outscored. But after this game, he has a positive 2.3 rating with him on the Cavs have a positive 2.3 rating with him on the floor in the finals, and it was a -1 with him off the floor.
Wow.
And that may not seem like a big swing, but if you think about the margins that the Cavs won by, which is 4 points across the entire series, that's actually kind of big, +2.3.
Right. And it's incredible. Like, he shot terribly basically the entire finals. He missed that huge three that was wide open in the corner. He just couldn't get a shot going this finals. But it just goes to show that, like, what he contributes is not just his offense. I mean, he's a really good... I can't believe I'm saying this because it's so against the grain of the narrative, but he's really strong defensively. And, you know...
Well, like, he can be when he's focused. Like, I will definitely say that he sometimes loses focus.
Sure.
Which ends up...
sure.
Which is probably part of his skill, right? Like, I think focus is a part of your skill. If you keep getting distracted too often or can't stay with the guy, I think that is part of your skill.
Yeah.
Skill level.
But defensive RPM doesn't lie. He was top 20 in the NBA this season in defensive RPM. And tonight, or last night, on the world's, you know, biggest stage and, you know, perhaps the most important moment of the game, he somehow got switched onto Steph Curry. And, you know, Steph tried his dazzling array of moves, but, you know, Love stayed with him, got a hand up, and Steph missed.
That was some amazing footwork, too, by Kevin Love.
Yeah.
His defensive stance was good. He moved quickly. He moved assertively. And, yeah, like you said, he got a hand up in the end. So Steph actually had to kind of lean sideways to get that shot off.
Yeah.
Which is never a good thing.
Yeah, it wasn't. Steph knew it wasn't going in as soon as it left his hands. He can tell when his shots are going in, and he did not have good body language after that one. It's just an incredible defensive stand by Kevin Love.
Usually what I've seen from Steph is that when he knows it's not going in, he usually tracks the ball back so he
Right.
could offensive rebound himself.
Yes.
Otherwise, when he knows it's going in, he just turns around and goes back in that transition.
Yeah, he's I he was just sort of he still made he made four threes last night, but he missed 10. He was 4 of 14, 6 of 19 overall, and just did not he just couldn't get it going in this series. He had two assists and four more turnovers last night. I thought the most interesting turnover of the night was with about, I'm sure you remember this, with about, I think on the clock there was like 5:10 left in the game. I believe it was tied. The Warriors had the ball, and Steph and Klay were coming down the right baseline, and Steph tried a behind-the-back pass to
Oh, I saw
Klay.
this, yeah. To Clay, and then
It was a
it just went
turnover.
out of
He
bounds.
missed. And I like looked at that, and I sort of said to myself, sort of loudly, did Steph just try a behind-the-back pass that missed with 5 minutes left in Game 7 of the NBA
When it
Finals?
was
And
tied, yeah.
yeah, and there were like, mumbles and muttering around me from the fans, like, yeah, that's not acceptable. Like, I can't, just sloppy. Like, you can't, with everything on the line. Like, I just can't believe he got sloppy in that moment. Yeah, and it was.
This is kind of what we talked about before these finals, right? Like, one of the biggest issues that Golden State has had is obviously Steph's turnovers, and the other one, in my opinion, is that the fact that they keep playing with fire.
Yeah.
They keep pushing it down to the sort of the last minute in a game, especially in the playoffs. They didn't do that as much in the regular season. They keep not putting out the best possible lineups that they can. They keep somehow giving the other team the benefit by playing Anderson Varejao, by playing, Festus Ezeli,
Right.
and even sometimes Harrison Barnes, and instead of starting Andre Iguodala. But yeah,
Yeah.
I think that finally caught up with them.
The Warriors are a more talented team than the Cavs, I think. And the reason why I was so pessimistic about the Cavs, really, for the last 2 years, is I felt like the Warriors had another level. Like, they, despite all their greatness, they still play inefficiently. Like, they march out lineups that don't make sense. They lose their focus at times. And it just seemed like when they needed it most, they would put out the right lineup and they would just, pace and space the Cavs into the ground. And I was positive that would happen. I was wrong. I was just completely wrong on this. I'm stunned by it. I wonder what the Warriors. Yeah, I wonder what the next step is for the Warriors. I mean, they.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Does this cast a negative light in your mind on Steve Kerr's coaching?
For me, yes, absolutely. Like, I. It was interesting when we were at Sloan in March and Bob Myers was there. It seemed to me that he was not saying the things that somebody who was all in on analytics would say. He talked about Andre Iguodala being glue during the huddle during certain times, and he
Which I
talked.
kind of get, right? Like, you can have an impact off the floor, which is not going to show up in RPM.
I agree.
I think I get that.
I agree, but
Yeah.
he also talked about how Kerr is just very well liked by the organization, and everyone who meets him really likes him. The things that I want my general manager to say is, we think we have a data advantage, and we're going to use that to maximize our talent advantage. And I just didn't get that impression from Myers, and really Kerr. Like, they obviously are, look, he's an outstanding general manager. He is perhaps, one of the best coaches in the league. But I don't think that he is looking at the numbers in the way that I think that I think there's a way of looking at the numbers that could make the Warriors even significantly better than they are, and they got a little sloppy in these finals, and they were,
Extremely
like you
sloppy, I would
said,
say.
they played with fire and they didn't maximize their talent, and they lost.
And yeah, I think we should definitely give Cavs the credit here too to push them into sloppiness, because this team still beat Oklahoma City even playing at this level,
Right.
and they came back down 3-1 and completely destroyed them for pretty much the next three games. Yeah, I think Cavs did a very. I think Tristan Thompson in particular was extremely physical. with the Warriors players, I think it wore down Andre Iguodala as the series went on. Steph was getting bumped every single time a big switched onto him. So I think I saw Caleb bumping him a couple times yesterday. I saw Tristan bumping him a bunch of times. I saw LeBron bumping him. Anytime he got a big switch on him, or anytime he tried to get through a pick and roll, he would get bumped incessantly. That probably affected his shooting down the stretch, but we never know.
Do you think the Cavs' strategy of being physical with Curry is, well, the first thing is, do you think that's new? Do you think that other teams haven't tried such a strategy?
I think it's a cumulative thing. So if someone in the first round tries it, it may not have the same effect as someone, say, in a game seven of the finals, because this wear and tear kind of builds up. It's not just a one-time thing. It builds up over the course of the season. So
Does there one mitigating factor there is there's more rest in the playoffs than there is in the regular season.
yeah, I think there is, but if someone like Curry, who probably wasn't 100% after his surgery anyway, I think it mattered more.
After his injury, you mean?
After his injury, yeah. So not surgery, yeah, after his injury. His MCL strain.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if it affected or not, but it was the right thing to do. Let's put it
Of
that way.
course. Yeah, no,
The
I
process was correct.
Do you
And
think
as we talked about it on this podcast, process is the only thing you can control. You can't control the results.
Right. Okay, question two. Do you think that the way that games are called in the finals affects the viability of such a strategy?
Yeah. Especially the way you can sort of, call out the refs after the game and actually get your way with them. So something interesting that happened last night was Tristan Thompson got in foul trouble. And to me, that was because Kerr called out the referees the game before. And he
Yeah,
actually got
and good
called
for
in a
them.
couple of
And good
good
for
for
them
them.
for doing
And they
that, yeah.
didn't. And we did the same thing with LeBron two games before that. I was, in fact, a little peeved that Tyronn Lue didn't take the time to call them out again after Steve Kerr did, just to sort of, negate the effect or whatever.
Right.
But
Yeah, the
take the fine, man. Who
psychological
cares?
warfare with the NBA and the officials.
But Steph Curry was in foul trouble again. And he was still incessantly swiping at balls, trying to, get at guys in isolation. Like, he was, again, toeing the line pretty carefully, or pretty not very carefully,
Yeah,
even after he
recklessly.
picked it recklessly after he got the first three fouls.
Yeah, his fourth foul was a really interesting one. It was he got sort of, pinned in a screen, and I was at the game, so didn't really have the benefit of replay. But to me, it looked like, look, maybe that's like the kind of thing that only gets called a foul on him like 30% of the time. But why is he putting himself in such a position? Like, that's not a heady basketball play there. Like, I'm
It
not
was
sure.
not.
So many of his fouls over the last two games were debatable on the face, but not on the intent. Like, he kept putting himself in situations that sort of challenged the refs to not call a foul, and they called fouls.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a position where you're challenging those guys, right? Like, they can control the outcome of the game, especially down the stretch. You just want to be on their good sides.
I don't know what to say about Steph Curry. He was the best player in the NBA's regular season this year, and it wasn't really close. And if it was close between LeBron James and his own teammate Draymond Green.
I
And
thought it got a little close toward the end.
it did, it did. Like, the RPM gap shrunk as we sort of got toward the end of the season. But yeah, let's say for the first two thirds of the season, Curry was far
Yeah,
and
it
away
wasn't even
the
close.
best player in the world, and it was sort of interesting watching him these finals. It must be that he is either injured or some sort of, mental thing. I'm not sure what it is. We've talked about it over and over. We've ground this topic into dust. But so bizarre, so unexpected. I'm not quite sure what to say about it.
Let's take a second to talk about his game here. So I think there's a lot of levels to what he does, right? Like, people think all he does is score efficiently, but during the regular season, he did other things really well. He was a solid defender.
Yeah,
He
led
was a
the NBA
very
in
good
steals.
defensive, right? Led the NBA in steals. He was a very good defensive rebounder for a point guard. Actually, really, really good. I think he might have been one of the best after Rajon Rondo and Russell Westbrook. And yeah, he just did, and he was an ex excellent playmaker. He ended up with like 7 assists a game, and that was on, 33 minutes that he was playing every single night. So he did, and his turnover count was fairly low. Like, people blame him for his turnovers, but during the regular season, he did a pretty good job of keeping him low. So his
Yes.
assist turnover ratio was like 1.98 or something, if I remember correctly. And usually the number you want to go for is like 2.0. So
Yeah.
he was
Yeah, so
right
he's
there at
right on
that
that
level.
line.
Right.
One other thing I would say about Steph is I largely credit him and Draymond to some extent with the way that they're able to execute that motion offense down the stretch of close
Down the stretch,
games.
exactly, yeah.
And it's a huge advantage for them. Like most teams identify their superstar and just sort of go into isolation mode at, toward the end of the games. And the Warriors, through process and success, are able to go to that motion offense, which is just a more effective offense. And Steph is the backbone of that.
Yeah,
And
and their motion offense, like you said, is dependent on the Steph Draymond Green pick and roll, right? Like, Draymond sets a pick for Steph, and then either they have to trap him or they have to take some time hedging and recovering, which gives either Draymond a crease or Steph a crease, and then Steph can shoot lights out, and Draymond can make a ton of good decisions with the basketball in his hand. So that ends up helping them out. And they ended up, I think, having a plus 40 net rating in crunch time during the regular season. That was the
Right.
greatest by a team in a long, long time. The Miami Heat of, I think, 2012 had a plus 30 net rating in crunch time.
Huh. Yeah, and that's 25% worse.
Right.
Yeah, the Warriors
And
are
even if you
just.
watch them, like, it always feels hopeless being on the other end down the stretch, because they always make the right decisions. Their shots always go in, and they defend extremely well down the stretch.
Right.
None of that happened in the finals. It was completely reversed. Every time the game got close, it was pretty much the Cavs taking control.
Yep. The Warriors' defense down the stretch in the fourth quarter was pretty good last night.
It was. But I think that the Cavs defense, I actually thought it was better.
Oh, it was. I mean, the
There was something
Cavs,
to be said.
I don't know where that came from. I guess just everybody.
I've noticed that the Cavs play better defense when they miss shots on the other end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know. Yeah, I've noticed that as well.
Yeah,
Gosh, what
one thing I want
else?
to add
Yeah, go
about
ahead.
Steph Curry is he ended up with more turnovers in the finals than assists. Like, even if he was injured, so his true shooting percentage in the regular season was around 65 to 66 the entire season. It dropped to 60% in the playoffs, and 60% again on his usage rate, which is about 31%, is still really, really good. It's pretty much elite level. So from a point of scoring efficiency, he was still getting the job done. But the big problem was he had so many more turnovers than assists, and he wasn't playmaking like he was in the regular season, that his effectiveness got reduced from that standpoint. Also, defensively, he kept getting attacked every single time by the Cavs. I
Yeah.
mean, I think the Cavs' only source of offense down the stretch was finding the guy who was guarding Curry and having him screen for the ball handler and getting Curry switched on to the ball handler.
Yeah, Zach Lowe mentioned that in his piece today, that the Cavs were almost surgical in their attempts to get Curry switched on to somebody to force a mismatch. It was really interesting. Yeah, I mean, Curry got sliced up by Irving early in the series. Eventually, the Warriors got smart to that and switched Klay onto Irving. But yeah, Klay, Steph's. I really I feel bad for Steph Curry. Like he had such a spectacular run this year, and for me, this win makes me able to appreciate what Steph Curry did even more. Like I was finding it really hard. It was, just a bitter pill to swallow how amazing Steph Curry was this year. And the Cavs winning is going to allow me to sort of appreciate what Curry did more, or at least I'll appreciate it more, less bitterly. And
Right.
I just somehow the Cavs were able to, but whether by injury or mental thing or the time off, Curry just got knocked off of his sort of incredible orbit that he was in. What do you think? Do you think he'll be better next season?
So he's not playing in the Olympics, right?
He
Is
is
that
not
correct?
playing in the Olympics.
Yeah, I think it depends if he has to have surgery or not. If he has to have surgery, I think it's going to take time to rehab, which I think is going to affect his, at least the beginning of a season. But if he doesn't have surgery, better than like regular season MVP level, I think that's hard to imagine because he was so good in the regular season. But I think he can be at least better in the playoffs. Let's put it that
Yeah.
way,
Yeah.
if that makes sense. And playoffs are what matter more, let's be honest here. Like, most people are playing for the playoffs in the end. They aren't exactly playing for regular season records.
Right. Yeah.
One thing I want to mention, though, is you know, you talked about how you appreciate Steph Curry more after watching the Warriors play in the playoffs. To me, yeah. I actually appreciate LeBron more, because you have to think about, this is the second time the Warriors made the finals and they were already breaking down. Like, you know, Andre Iguodala was super injured. I mean, Steph looked really slow, and LeBron's been doing it for 6 years straight now, and he still somehow ends up playing 45 minutes per game in the NBA finals for 6 years in a row, and he still does a pretty damn good job. I think he only had one off finals by his standards, or maybe one and a half if you want to put it that way. Everything else, he's been amazing in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a matter of time until we got to LeBron James here. He was just sensational these playoffs. I'm so confused by what he did. I mean, I've spent the last 2 years basically saying he's declining and the Cavs better shape up, because, you know, they're going to exhaust the resource that is LeBron James and they're not going to get a championship, and it'll be because we mismanaged him. I'm going to lay off that narrative for a while. last night he played 46 minutes, 49 seconds. So he played all but 1 minute, 11 seconds. I remember those 1 minute, 11 seconds. It was at the end of the first quarter.
First quarter, yeah.
And then they've actually brought him in for the last offensive possession of the first quarter.
Which was a good idea.
Good coaching by Lou. Particularly easy to say if you knew he was going to play the rest of the game. And he just, I mean, he, it just an incredible game from him last night. He had 27 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. That incredible block on Andre Iguodala with less than 2 minutes left.
One of the greatest blocks of all time.
Yeah, if you scale it by importance, perhaps the greatest block.
I mean, also just by athleticism, I'm not sure there was a better block in the regular season.
Yeah.
He came out of nowhere. So somebody measured his distance and his time, and I think they said it was like a 16.5 second 100 meter dash.
Wow! Yeah, world record is a little bit under 10. That's good. So one other thing about that block. So I was at the arena when that block happened. It was just sort of stunned silence. Like everyone was, it was like a feeling of, how did that even happen? Like, we saw it with our own eyes, but it was unbelievable to imagine that. I think the most common thought was, like, how can that possibly not be goaltending? But yeah, I've seen the replay 100 times now. It was not goaltending. He just somehow closed that gap in an almost humanly impossible way.
One thing that kind of bothers me from someone who likes to do statistical analysis,
yeah,
is that, to me, watching LeBron in the playoffs, it is clear that he was saving himself for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that really complicates regular season analysis, especially when you're using it in a predictive fashion.
Yes. Yeah.
And even like Kyrie, like he had a terrible regular season. You are not going to convince me that he was good in the regular season. Of course, like, he wasn't bad either, but he was okay. He was pretty bad by his own standards. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Arnav, he was, what was his regular season RPM? Like, he was the 250th like best player in the NBA.
He wasn't good.
Of course, you know, that's hurt a little bit by, he was recovering from an injury. But look, yeah, he was the 250th best player. In these playoffs, he was one of the top 10 players. And he turned that up to another level. And I'm not sure.
I would work to top 5 in the playoffs.
Yeah. I was saying top 10 to be uncontroversial. I think that, I'm not sure if Kyrie was saving himself or if he just didn't get to this elevated plane until the playoffs started. It is weird that it happened as soon as the playoffs started, right?
He was saving himself. He was visibly frustrated in the regular season.
Right.
He even said himself after that Bulls game, he was so mad at himself because he couldn't get himself going, and they actually had that game in their hands.
Right.
No, I think he just sort of turned a corner at the right time.
I think so too. But I don't think that for LeBron James. I think LeBron James must have been saving something. And again, I did not That was a thing that people would say, and whenever people would say that, I would just roll my eyes. I'm like, look, LeBron's out there trying. Like, if he makes mistakes, it's not because he's saving himself. It's because he's not as good anymore. I was wrong.
Right.
I don't know what else to say.
What else did I want to say here? Yeah, one thing I want to add is Love did not have the best finals, obviously. I thought he had a very good game seven. He didn't shoot well, but I still think he was very impactful in that game. But I think the biggest contribution that Kevin Love had in the playoffs was he and Kyrie Irving, the job they did was to reduce LeBron's usage rate before the finals. LeBron played a career low in minutes per game. He had a career low in usage percentage before the finals started. And I think that was a big part of why he was fresh in the finals and why he was able to do games, why was he able to perform like he did in games 5 and 6.
Right. Yeah. Love in particular was good. In the first three rounds, he was great. He was able to score quite a bunch, and getting that
his
load
rebounding off, was excellent.
Yeah, getting that load off of LeBron was probably a big part of why he was able to be superhuman in games 5, 6, and 7. It's just,
and that's gonna be big going. Like, it's gonna be big next year. It's gonna even get bigger every single year as LeBron gets older. We want his usage to get even less and less, and save himself even more and more for the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of podcast coming up here where we're going to discuss, you know, what the Cavs should do going forward.
Yeah, I think we should go and do every single player, but
how they deal with LeBron's rest regimen, especially as, you know, Kyrie ascends into his peak over the next 2 or 3 years, will be interesting. Yeah, we'll talk about that this offseason.
Do you want to describe your experience at the game? I thought that'd be kind of interesting.
Sure. Yeah, so I got there. I bought my ticket at around 1 p.m. Pacific time, and then I hopped on a train. I got to the arena at maybe 2:30. Doors opened at 3, and just sort of hung around outside. There's lots of TV people doing, you know, various things, and people just sort of milling around. I like getting to games early. Especially game 7 of the finals. It's fun watching the arena fill up. I went down to courtside and sort of smooth talked one of the security guys, so he let me sort of stand there for an hour, and I watched the Cavs players who come out and warm up early. So Mozgov was out there, Tristan was out there, JR and Kyrie were out there, just sort of getting some work in. And once the arena started getting filled, this is sort of an electric atmosphere. I think the fans, most of the Golden State Warriors fans, just sort of, I don't know if the word is assumed, but they had in retrospect, naivety, but a confidence about them that I was almost sort of jealous of. Like, I expected the Cavs to lose last night, and seeing their confidence was sort of almost bummed me out a little bit. That arena is incredibly hostile. I mean, I don't mean people were mean to me. All the people I met last night were very kind to me. But the intensity of that crowd is insane. They're just incredibly loud. Whenever the Warriors score, it's like pandemonium in there. Whenever they get a stop, it's pandemonium. I didn't sit the entire game. I had some friends in some other sections. None of them sat the entire game. The only time I sat was a little bit during timeouts. I would sit down and sort of try to collect my thoughts and rest a little bit. But it was just such an incredibly intense experience. I remember with 1 minute left in the game, it was 89-89, sort of taking a second to look around and try to appreciate it, in case the Cavs lost. Fortunately, that didn't happen. But it's a night that I'll just never forget. And
to me, it always felt like, not always, but in this game, to me, it felt like this arena got quieter and quieter as the game went on. Is that what actually happened, or was that something that I was just looking at on the screen?
Yeah, I think It's hard to, my perspective is so biased, and I was so convinced the Cavs were going to lose the whole game that everything just felt like a trigger for me, and you know, felt intimidating and hostile. I do think, in retrospect, looking back at it, there was, as the fourth quarter went on, there was a feeling that the feeling of inevitability for the Warriors, I think, sort of started to, they could feel the train coming off the rails a little bit. The Warriors got up 8 at some point in the third quarter, and the Cavs
were also up 7 at the end of the second quarter.
Right.
So at halftime.
Right. Yeah, they got up 7 at halftime, and boy, they came close to getting up 10 before halftime. Kyrie mismanaged that last possession of the second quarter. But in any case, once the Cavs were able to chop down that 8-point lead in the third quarter, and I can't remember what it was going in.
It was J.R. Smith making a bunch of threes.
Yeah, he made 2 threes. But what do you remember what the score was going into the third quarter? Okay, so the Cavs won the fourth.
Yeah,
going
it was 42-49.
What was it? Sorry, what was it going into the fourth?
It was 90. No, it was 80-79, I think. It was there was a 1-point difference. So
that's
the
right.
Warriors,
they got it back to
one.
I think I remember tweeting the Cavs have won 2 out of the 3 quarters, for whatever that's worth. And yeah, the Cavs just kept fighting back. Like normally what happens is the Warriors go on a run, and then the other team just sort of gets away from their process. And once you get away from your process, it's hard to find results. But the Cavs just kept fighting back. They kept fighting back. They wouldn't go away. There was a segment of the fourth quarter when Steph came down, made a 3. The Warriors got a stop. And then Klay came down, made a 3. And, you know, it's moments like that where it's just easy to sort of fold and be like, well, we're just not good enough. But the Cavs didn't. It was surreal. It was incredible. When Kyrie made that 3, I started trembling. Like, my body, I'm being like, I sound like I'm being melodramatic, but this actually happened. Like, I wasn't really able to process what was going on. Like, the possibility that the Cavs might win, like, sort of started entering my mind.
I think the same thing happened for me. When Kyrie made the 3, I was like, okay, well, they just need to get a stop, which is, again, kind of important, which is hard to do in this situation, mm-hmm. but I think they can do it. And then when K-Love got switched onto it.
Yeah, when you saw Kevin Love get switched off on Curry, like...
biggest defensive possession of the entire season, of probably Cleveland's...
Franchise history.
It was the biggest defensive possession. And it was, you know, who was, at least in public perception, the worst defensive player on the team. Actually not true, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's
the
narrative.
And he did an excellent job.
Yeah. I thought Zach Lowe had a great quote in his article on this. I'll read it just because I thought it was pretty poetic. He said, "And on the last meaningful possession of Golden State's shattered season, Love did what everyone, including this writer, said he could not do. He shadowed Steph Curry through a gauntlet of dribble moves, stayed down, and harassed the MVP into one last miss."
RPM redemption game because... Yeah. Pretty much everyone who was good by RPM was good, and everyone who was bad was bad.
Yeah. Well, RPM is the single most predictive and accurate stat, as we discussed in a podcast. In early Cavalytics podcast, we discussed why RPM is so good, and it finally showed itself to be the best. What a night. Incredible.
I have a question for you. So what do you think of Draymond Green after his performance?
Right.
He actually had the 8th best game score in NBA Finals history. He actually, so by game score, he surpassed Kyrie's game 5 performance. Because I think he was like 11 of 15 or something. Let me check. Yeah, he was 11 of 15.
He was 11 of 15.
He scored 32 points.
Arnav, he was 6 of 8 from 3. He was 4 of 4 from the line.
Right, exactly. And he had 15 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, only 2 turnovers, 0 blocks, but he also played all but 1 minute and 6 seconds.
Draymond Green.
That was an incredible game from him, honestly. I was scared as hell every time he had the ball in his hands.
I remember his 8th attempted 3. He was wide open somehow, and he missed. I couldn't believe he missed that shot.
I was so ticked that the Cavs didn't have LeBron guarding him at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, I texted you about that. I mean, Draymond had an outstanding first half. I mean, just couldn't miss from three. The rebounds, the passing, just every he was everywhere on the floor. He was bringing his energy. He was he was, you know, arguably the best player on the court last night. He really redeemed himself. It's a shame that a team had to lose this series, and I felt bad for Draymond last night. He was spectacular. I mentioned this to you before we started recording, but after the game, I sort of wandered down to the party that was going on the court, and Draymond Green came over and
He congratulated LeBron.
Yeah, from what I could see, he went up to every single Cavs player and shook hands with them and said congratulations. And there were a couple Cavs players who were like maybe in an interview or celebrating with someone else, and he like waited to like get his chance, and then he, said, "Hey, congrats." And that's not what the narrative is about Draymond Green, but that was one of the most sporting. That was one of the best sort of exhibitions of sportsmanship you can possibly imagine. I mean, he just lost an incredibly painful series. You know,
because of his own mistakes.
Right,
I mean, the game five suspension doesn't happen, maybe the Cavs just lose game five. I mean, I don't think they do, assuming everything plays out the same way, which is a huge assumption, because when Draymond's on the floor, there's secondary effects that happen. But assuming LeBron and Kyrie play a similar game when Draymond's on the floor, I think the Cavs would have still won, because Kyrie just made ridiculous shots, and LeBron made the shots they actually wanted him to take.
Right.
If that makes sense.
That's right. Yeah, LeBron was not... He was driving with a little bit more ease, but he was really driving in Game 6. In Game 5, he was just making shots.
He made a bunch of jump shots that
he was 4 of 8 from 3 that game, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Look, these systems are nonlinear and, to some extent chaotic. And seeing, it's hard to know what would have happened in Game 5 if Draymond played. I tend to think they would have won. But given the level that the Cavs played at in Game 5, even if Draymond was there.
And 6 and 7. But
right. Yeah. I'm just not sure. But in any case, I just want to, he doesn't care. But, I take my proverbial hat off to Draymond Green. He was spectacular last night.
He was the best warrior in the series too.
Yeah, and his display after the game was perhaps even more impressive than his display during the game. It's just
I was pretty
good for him
by the lack of maturity displayed by not Draymond himself, but just other Warriors, specifically Klay and just other guys. You know, after that that whole incident with LeBron and Draymond Green in game, was it 3-4? Game four, at the end of game four, when he got that flagrant one, retroactive flagrant one.
Mm-hmm.
Just guys were tweeting shit about LeBron. They were saying stuff to his face. Like when has that ever worked with LeBron, right? Pretty much every time he has his back against the wall, that's when he performs really well.
Yeah. Well, look, I expect Klay to... Yeah, I'm not sure what he'll say post-game or what he did say. I haven't had a chance to sort of consume all the content. I'll get at that today. It's going to be a fun day. I'm not sure. Hopefully he displays some humility and, you know, says, look, we just got beat. But if he doesn't say it, you know he knows it, and that's pretty satisfying.
One thing that I thought was also interesting was in the post-game press conference when Curry was asked about LeBron. He was extremely hesitant. So the way so he was asked about how good was LeBron's performance, and then he hesitated for like a good 10 to 15 seconds, and then was like, "Oh, it was very good. He did what he needed to do to help his team win." To me, that seemed kind of weird, honestly.
Well, Arnav, listen. Those post-game press conferences that they force the players on the losing team to do are pretty. That's a little bit of sort of like a cruel and unusual form of punishment. Whatever he said, sort of, I mean, you know, he's still sort of seeing red in his eyes. His ears are still ringing from the crowd. You know, the adrenaline is still sort of coming down. maybe he reacted a little bit inappropriately there, but it's a little bit hard to hold a grudge against him for that.
Yeah,
I'll be interested in what he says in the coming days. Like, and I'm not that he mishandled that situation is a little bit disappointing, but sort of on the scale of you know, wrongs against LeBron, what Klay did after Game 4 was just classless. Like, they were up 3-1. They were the
he took
smugness,
advantage of that situation because he knew, yeah, he thought they were going to win. So right. Why not just get some digs in right at this point?
And I'm sure Klay regrets that. And he's young. He'll learn from that. But
and then Maurice Bates tweeted something. Do you remember that?
Yeah, whatever. I don't even want to dedicate our podcast bit rate to
Maurice Bates.
But yeah, he did say something. He sort of piled on, but whatever.
Did Lou impress you? Not impress you? Did an okay enough job to help the Cavs? And like, where is he on a scale of 0 to 10?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good question. So he obviously.
We should definitely do a podcast that's specifically about Tyronn Lue's tenure. But yeah, let's just get a We just get a feel for what you think about him.
Yeah. Right. Get some hot takes here. Yeah. I mean, he obviously did an quote unquote, in your words, okay enough job to get by. I was not happy with his rotations in the first half. I didn't want to see Mo Williams. Maybe Dele's hurt, although I haven't heard anything about that, and so
I think he's hurt. So a lot of people have been saying that he's been getting back treatment, pretty much regularly every time he can. So I think that's big. I think he might have a herniated disc or something.
Huh. That's interesting. If he has a herniated disc, that can be a big problem. Because
we'll hear more about this.
Yeah. Even if Mo Williams was, even if Dele was hurt, I'm not sure that playing him. I don't know about. Hold on, I want to say one more thing about Dele. Why did he play at the end of Game 6 then?
Did he play at the end of Game 6?
Yeah, he played in garbage time at the end of Game 6.
Yeah, he should have just played Mo Williams, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I think the herniated or whatever issues he might have may not prevent him from playing the game, but it may actually prevent him from being effective. That's my only theory there.
Yeah, could be. Well, in any case, I wasn't happy about seeing Mo Williams on the floor. His one shot was because he made one shot. He was one of three.
It was a horrible shot. Oh my God.
He hurried a three. And
oh, he's wondering about his layup because he leaked out. He didn't get back on defense.
He didn't leak out. What happened? I was on that end of the court. Here's what happened. He tried to exaggerate a contact. He somersaulted or sort of like rolled over into the camera bay and was like, you know, he ended up like, you know, 15 feet off the court. And then he couldn't get back to play defense on that possession because he was so busy with his histrionics down on the Warriors end. And then he finally gets up, and then in the meantime, LeBron had gotten a steal, and LeBron passed it to Mo Williams, and he made the cherry picking layup. So yeah, his one shot, I'm not giving him credit for that. He also had a turnover. One of three with a turnover in 4:45 of play. That Dele, here's what I like about Dele. Dele never plays outside of his role. Like, Mo was so desperate to show that he belonged that he clearly showed he didn't belong. Dele doesn't do that. Like, Dele plays within himself. And anyway, that bothered me. Maybe you're right that Dele's hurt, and so, you know, somebody had to get those minutes. But I would have rathered, you know, the dual lineup of Shumpert and JR.
I want to say something about Shumpert here. I think he's been terrible pretty much the entire playoffs and the entire regular season.
Yeah.
That the fact that he got 20 minutes in Game 7 of the NBA Finals was kind of ticked me off a little bit, let's be honest with you.
Well...
But then again, who do you give minutes, right? Like, if you can't give... I would have played Richard Jefferson more. I would have played JR more, honestly. I think JR can go about 40 minutes. I think Richard Jefferson can go definitely about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I just don't think Shumpert should have gotten that many minutes. He was not good defensively last night. He kept missing Steph. He fouled him a couple of times. He fouled him once on a layup, if I remember correctly. He can't make a shot to save his life. And then he tries to hear ball once in a while, which doesn't help either.
Yeah. Yeah, that missed three. He had a wide open three. I don't remember when that was, but I...
He made a four-point play, so what the heck?
That four-point play was amazing. The Cavs were down two, and they
we needed
and suddenly they were up two. Yeah, Shump was he was one of three, but his one was a three, and in fact, all of his shots last night were threes, and he also made three free throws.
And the Cavs, so that's the thing, right? It was a one possession game with a minute left to go. And that sort of tells you that we needed pretty much every single free throw, every single point, every single rebound, every single steal from everyone just to even be in that position.
The Cavs were 21 of 25 from the line last night.
Exactly. And they've been a terrible free throw shooting team the entire regular season. They were 73% before, I
Yep.
think before the All-Star game, and then they improved to like 75.
LeBron was 8 of 10. My favorite was Tristan Thompson's 3 of 4. I think all four of those free throws came in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And
No, no,
the
no. I
first,
think a couple were before that,
or the
yeah.
third quarter, I mean. I think all four came in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And he. Yeah, I mean, when he went to the line, some of the fans around me were like, "Oh, well, here's one of two," and he canned both of the first ones, and then he missed his last one. But,
That's okay. I was okay with that.
yeah, I'll take 3 out of 4 of Tristan
Oh, and LeBron
anytime.
made 8 of 10, but
Yes.
the way I think about it is 8 of 9 because he almost hurt his broke his wrist at one point. You
Yeah.
remember? I was so
Yeah.
worried, man.
No, I don't
I was
remember
actually
that play.
looking
What
up
happened?
rules. So apparently the rule is that if you hurt yourself and you have to shoot free throws, the opposing coach can select anyone on your bench to shoot the free throws for you. So I think he would have picked Sasha Kahn or someone random, or maybe Timofey Mozgov to
Sasha
shoot the.
Kahn was in a suit last night, so it wouldn't
Oh,
have
so
been
he wouldn't.
him.
So
But
maybe like Timofey Mozgov or someone.
Mozgov's a decent free throw shooter. But yeah, he could find someone back there. Maybe Dante
Maybe
Jones. I
Tristan. Why
don't.
not Tristan? Yeah, you pick Tristan there. He's the worst
Yeah,
free throw shooter we have.
I don't remember if Tristan was on the court. Can it be someone who's on the floor?
No, it has to be someone. Oh, on the court or on the bench?
It can't be someone who's on the court. It has to be someone who's on the bench. I think.
I know the. Yeah, I'm not sure if the rules is on the bench. I think it's just someone who's in suit. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, well then he
Who's
could
not
have
in
picked
suit, yeah.
Tristan. Oh my God, Tristan at the line for the season. That would have been
Then again, like he's
interesting.
not that much worse than LeBron, especially
Yeah.
LeBron in the playoffs. Like LeBron was like 65% in the playoffs, so.
Yeah. Dante Jones is 75%. Yeah, all of the Cavs only played eight guys last night, and Mo Williams only played 4 minutes 45 seconds.
What was he, a
So.
minus something?
Oh yeah, he was minus five.
Of course.
Which is hard to do. I thought it was interesting that down the stretch, Barbosa and Livingston didn't really get much run. Like they messed around with Varejao. Like I don't.
It was so bad. I would have been so pissed if Steve Kerr coached an NBA Finals game 7 like that for me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, LB, Barbosa and Livingston were. Spectacular for the entire finals, and it's just bizarre that I think Barbosa didn't play in one of the games, which is a little bit odd. But yeah, if you're going to shorten your bench, shorten it by not playing Andy. Don't shorten it by not playing, Livingston or Barbosa.
And while Barbosa's a bad defender, Anderson's a worse defender. And
Right.
Anderson's a big man. So a big man defense is far more important than anything, you can get from your point guard or shooting guard position.
Yeah, that's sort of poor coaching there.
Yeah.
Do
I'm
you
just
think
glad
the.
Andy ended up helping us somehow
Yeah,
win
I was
the
pretty
championship.
upset with. I'll say this about Andy. Part of this, I think I've mentioned this before, part of this is sort of karma, I think. I don't believe in karma, but I think Cavs fans were blind to his antics while he was in a Cavs uniform. And Varejao over the course of his career has sort of pulled a lot of BS, and he has always been this guy who like goes out there and flops around and gets underneath the other team's skin, and it was frustrating. I don't like how. Like I think Varejao got into it with Shumpert a little bit, and there were
And
a
then with
few in,
LeBron,
yeah.
did you
Like
see that?
I did. Something that was that in the first quarter? Like something weird happened.
Yeah, I think,
Was
yeah,
that
he
with
fouled
Varejao?
LeBron, and
Okay.
then LeBron, I think he bumped LeBron on the way, or I think LeBron bumped him or something like that. And then they kind of got in each other's faces, but then they realize they're actually friends, so.
They're like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I'll see you next Friday. Okay. I mean, it was bizarre, you know, seeing him on the other team. But I thought that Varejao could have done his same sort of floppy BS antics without the extracurricular stuff after the whistles.
Especially against, you know, the team that you played for.
That's why. Yeah, that's why. I'm conceptually fine with, you know, his entire game. Like, that is his game, is sort of being right on that edge and being annoying. That is annoying, but I don't have a problem with that. What I had a problem with was some of the stuff after the whistles. And, I wish he hadn't done that. But, you know, Andy's going to be Andy. Like, in some ways, I'm impressed that he was able to bring so much energy to the finals, given the awkwardness of the situation. And he's going to get a ring anyway, so...
So, I mean, I think you know this. I've told you before, I've never been a big fan of Andy. I think it's primarily because Cavs fans just talked about him in such great light the entire season that it really ticked me off.
Right.
Like, people were saying that he stuck with the Cavs out of loyalty. The reason he stuck with the Cavs was because he was injured most of the time, so the Cavs couldn't actually trade him. And even when he was in free agency, he actually stuck out. He actually held out for longer than he should have to get more money.
People forget the season that Andy didn't play until December because he was in a contract holdout. He got a massive contract then, which was an overpay. This most recent contract was an even more massive
overpay.
Yeah. The Cavs are still paying Varejao's salary or parts of it. Or no, wait, they're not.
Portland is.
Yeah, Portland is. Portland's on the hook. We got the trade exception.
Yeah.
Andy's going to be Andy. I'm a little bit stung by sort of the way that ended, but I think as time goes by, I'll look back at him fondly. One more thing on Andy, he's been awful the last 2 years. There were a number of years, and unfortunately we don't have RPM for anything before two seasons ago, but I think there were a number of years where Andy was pretty underrated. I mean, he was elite at that sort of free throw line extended jumper, defense. His defense and irritability was pretty good. The problem with Varejao over his career was he could never stay healthy, and you couldn't rely on him being healthy.
I absolutely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say about Andy, though, is the part that annoyed me specifically was that he wasn't looking to play defense at all. He was pretty much looking to flop every single possession that he could. Like, I understand flopping in the sense that as a complementary strategy, something you sort of pick your spots and do it once in a while so you can get the added advantage. But if you're doing every single possession, the refs are going to catch up to you, man. It's not going to work. I'm sorry.
They are, and they did. I'm not sure there is any other part of Anderson Varejao's game anymore. Like,
he's old, and
he's had so many injuries that I don't know if he can play straight up defense anymore, and so that's all he has left. And if that's the case, like, good on him for figuring out some way to, you know, squeeze blood from the husk of his body.
There was a possession where Caleb was trying to back him down. Now, Caleb is good at many things, but I don't think he has the physical stature to back Anderson Varejao down. Let's be honest there.
I agree.
But instead of holding his ground, Andy flopped. And then Caleb actually ended up getting free throws. So, like, what the hell was that?
Yeah. That possession was sort of amusing. It was amusing for several reasons. First off, stop going to Kevin Love in the post. It hasn't worked this series at all. And then second off, he got free throws on that. The crowd was pretty incensed about that. It was a satisfying moment.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. So, do you have anything else to add?
Well, we should talk about Richard Jefferson and him announcing
his retirement.
Oh, yeah,
he's retiring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm extremely sad. I think I texted you this after the game. I think he was a hugely underrated part of our locker room and how it came together towards the end of the season. He and Channing Frye, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And obviously his play in the finals was amazing. I mean, when Kevin Love went down, I was extremely worried that who was going to step in. It ended up being Richard Jefferson. In fact, he actually played even well. He actually played well even after Kevin Love came back. And he held his ground there. So that was amazing to watch. And I think he still probably had enough to give. next year and the year after that.
He could definitely sign a 2-year deal with someone, I'm positive.
He was finishing so well near the rim. He was finishing better than a young wing like Harrison Barnes was near the rim.
Yeah, I mean, some of this is a matter of practicality for Richard Jefferson. I mean, I'm looking it up right now, but he has made a lot of money in his career.
He definitely has a career in speaking, or like being on a talk show.
Oh, he's so articulate. He'll definitely, if he wants to, he'll be in it. He'll be announcing somewhere.
I think he wants to.
Maybe even a
coach. Probably see him on Inside the NBA or something like that. One of those shows.
Yeah. Yeah. He has made $108 million over the course of his career. He made $1.5 million this year. I think he would be hard-pressed getting more than maybe some team would give him $3 million. But when you've made $108 million, you know, $3 million isn't much, and he's 35 years old. I know what it's like to be 35 years old because I am 35 years old. This is interesting. Actually, his birthday... What's this? Today, June 21st? Oh, today's June 20th. So 20th. He turns 36 tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was looking at the basketball reference thing shows age in years dot days, and he's 35.365 today.
Yeah, his birthday is tomorrow.
Yeah, nice. So yeah, you know, he's 36, and he's not going to make materially more money, and so he'd only be doing it for, you know, a ring, and he just got a ring, so. You know, I think he realizes how hard it was. I did happen to see one of a post-game thing with him yesterday, and he's like, this last month has been the most stressful month of my life. Like, I'm ready to retire. And yeah, I feel him, and I don't begrudge him at all. And yeah, thank you, Richard Jefferson, for sort of one of the most unlikely finals performances
when he signed,
I've ever seen.
I was pretty optimistic because I saw that he had a pretty good defensive RPM for a small forward. And he was shooting 40%+ from 3-point range. Mm-hmm. So that got me pretty excited. And I just knew that he was going to be better than Sean Marion.
Yeah.
Who just didn't have anything left at all.
Right.
I mean, Marion was completely useless, let's be honest here.
Yeah, he was. That was pretty disappointing.
Do you think Tyronn Lue deserves some credit here? It seems that players seem to like him more than they did David Blatt. So do you think Tyronn Lue deserves...
Well, I mean, I think... look, I don't like getting into the subjective, but I think we can objectively say the players like Lue better than Blatt. Sorry. What was your question? I didn't mean to...
Do you think that helps with, you know, sort of... I don't know, finding a role for guys like Richard Jefferson, you know, who are way past their prime, but still are able to contribute in the NBA playoffs, where someone like Mary isn't able to, or even Mike Miller didn't get any time, or any... James Jones got some time in the end, but... I don't know.
Right.
Maybe just has more to do with Richard Jefferson himself than to do with Tyronn Lue.
I'm not sure what to make of NBA coaches in general. I started talking about this a little bit at the top of the show with regards to Steve Kerr. I think a really interesting postseason podcast will be what is the role of a coach and where do analytics play into that. I don't think that Coach Lue is a super analytics-based coach. I think the Cavs occasionally whisper things in his ear, and he makes note of it. I think Coach Lue went with Richard Jefferson because he felt good about it. You know, he had that sort of quote-unquote feel, and it felt right going with Jefferson so much in these finals. Whatever it was, it worked. And... I think long term, I'm probably going to have some issues with the way that Coach Lue does rotations, and I'm sure I'll find some unhappiness somewhere. But, you know, last night and this series is sort of about the results versus the process. And I think the process, if it was perfect, would have selected Jefferson. And even if I don't like the way that he chose to play Jefferson, or if I hypothetically don't like the way I think he may have chosen to play Jefferson, he did, and it worked, and so Lue deserves at least some credit for that.
Oh, and he also brought back K-Love in the final, in the games six and seven, and he actually contributed, especially in game seven. So
right, there was an interesting moment in the fourth quarter with about, I want to say, 5 minutes left. Kevin Love was going to check in, and somebody for the Warriors was shooting free throws, and Lue actually pulled Love back, and Love looked he briefly looked a little bit bummed, but then Lou said something to him. I don't know what he said, but then he would, like, went back to the bench and looked like whatever Lou said, like, Love was confident with. I think he said, I'm going to let RJ play this defensive possession and then I'm going to bring you back. And it was probably something to that effect. But yeah, the way that Lou towed the line between Jefferson and Love after Jefferson established his ability to be a factor in these finals was pretty impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think there was a video after the, in I think in the, during the post-game celebration, where it was shown that Kevin Love was kept saying to Tyronn Lue that I appreciate you, I appreciate you. He just kept saying that again and again, which is a good thing, which is always a good thing to see from a player that who was not used to not starting.
Yeah.
Who finally got put in as a reserve at some point.
Yeah.
And he still appreciates the coach. It's always a good thing to see.
Yeah, to not harbor a grudge and not let that, right, you know, sort of poison their relationship.
Especially someone who was an all-NBA player, you know.
Right.
Has given up so many touches, so much usage rate.
Yeah.
But it paid off.
I think a big part of this offseason for the Cavs has to be, how do we get more value out of Kevin Love? And I think there's a puzzle to unlock there. We'll get into that in the offseason, of course, but
yeah, I think that'll... it's the Cavs have to do that. I think Kevin Love himself has to do that.
Agreed.
Do that, right? I think there were parts of the season where I was like, okay, you're not shooting well, but why the hell aren't you rebounding well too?
Right.
Especially, I think it was game two of the finals or game three of the finals, or game one of the finals, but anyway.
Yeah, game one, I think Love had like 2 rebounds or something.
No, that's not correct. Game one, he had 13 rebounds. I just
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Maybe it was game two.
The game after he came back from the concussion. But then again, he came back from a concussion, so you never know
yeah,
how much
what's going that on.
Was. Yeah, exactly. So.
Dusting off the cobwebs.
Yeah. Should we end it with
those? Yeah, we should. Yeah, we've been going for over an hour here. Yeah, you did.
Also,
you have
I think
else
I
want to
say
mention?
One thing. We didn't spend too much time talking about Kyrie and LeBron, but I think we'll have specific podcasts dedicated to them after this.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, we hardly talked about Kyrie at all. He had an important 3 last night.
Quite the greatest. I don't know. I think it was up there with Ray Allen 3, honestly. I saw Ray Allen 3 live on TV. And this was just as good, honestly, if not better, because the Ray Allen 3 was actually an open shot. This was a well-contested shot. It was the irony was that it was a shake-and-bake 3 on the king of shake-and-bake 3s.
Yes.
That's the shot that Steph shoots on people all the time. And
there's a replay angle that I haven't looked at all the photographs, and, you know, I was just going through Twitter, but one of them I saw is Steph is really close to blocking that shot.
He shot it in his eye. He shot it in his eye. If I remember correctly.
He didn't, and it went in.
Yeah. Amazing. One last question I have for you is, are you going to go to the parade by any chance?
I have bought plane tickets.
You did?
I'm leaving tomorrow I can't remember. I think I leave tomorrow morning, so I'll get there Tuesday afternoon, and then the parade is Wednesday.
Congrats. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Do you have any interest in going to the parade?
I will look at tickets and decide.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that off air.
Yeah, I think you should definitely put up videos and photos on the Twitter account.
Yeah, I mean, I need to go through my photos from last night. I took hundreds.
I think
you
posted good photos.
Yeah, I posted some of the better ones, but I've got a lot of crap to sort through as well. But anyway, what a night. So this has been episode 37 of Cavalytics, a special NBA championship edition. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA. I think I actually forgot to mention that in our intro. And we're planning on doing all kinds of sort of postseason and offseason content here. So don't worry, we're not going away. And one last time, congratulations to the Cleveland Cavaliers on being NBA champions. Go Cavs.